If oppression needs silence to survive, people around the country are doing their part in destroying it through discussion and dialogue. Anti-oppression trainings are workshops that seek to help people understand social privileges and the many forms of oppression. These trainings often take a closer look at how various forms of oppression operate on the ideological, institutional, and interpersonal levels. They also usually encourage people to articulate how they've internalized oppressive messages. Many people have pointed out a surge in the popularity of anti-oppression trainings since the 1999 mass protests against World Trade Organization talks in Seattle. From the animal rights movement to the anti-war movement to the grassroots media movement, and in business collectives and cooperatives, people are holding workshops on oppression. Organizations like the People's Institute, Tools for Change, the Challenging White Supremacy Workshop, the Unitarian Universalist Association, FIERCE, and the Student Environmental Action Coalition offer these trainings in various places around the U.S. Locally, the Asian American Resource Workshop in Boston and Class Action in Western Massachusetts offer trainings. In late March, Dwayne Dickerson, an anti-oppression trainer from Brooklyn, facilitated a training for local organizations Food Not Bombs, Operation Over, and the Animal Defense League. I asked him about the history of anti-oppression trainings.
Anti-oppression work has been around for a long time, and this has had different forms. I mean, as far as its relation to a sort of resurgent activist movement, it's definitely a young relationship. But I even remember anti-oppression trainings happening in Louisville, Kentucky in the early 80s. I'm sure things were going on before that even.
The new spread of anti-oppression trainings might be a sign that many activists are beginning to consider the ways that their own privileges and disadvantages are part of the exploitation they campaign against. In this way, trainings can discourage single-issue activism.
It's definitely been a proactive and progressing thing to see people who are concerned about specific issues, be it animal rights or zoning issues, you know, coordinating all sorts of different groups, bringing them together and really thinking about how you can build community by connecting the dots between these issues. I'd put a lot of heart into organizing this stuff because I feel like, you know, it's the best way to have community building.
The recent wave of anti-oppression workshops has been criticized by some activists. Selena Masuda and Darby Hickey, activists in D.C., say in an article that, quote, calling yourself anti-racist and being able to talk about white skin privilege has become trendy in the anti-globalization and later anti-war circles of the U.S. and Canada. This movement to address privilege ends up being very narcissistic. They point out cases where privileged people focus on their own feelings of guilt in workshops rather than the experiences of the oppressed. Workshop participants can take credit for supposedly purging their own oppressive beliefs without making any real changes in their organizing methods, they say. Jason Lydon, an anti-oppression trainer in Boston, says that trainers need to help participants draft concrete plans to actually change the patterns of domination within their organizations. Dwayne says that his workshops are designed to be emotionally challenging in a way that transforms people.
Something that they have to be aware of ahead of time is that they're not designed to make you comfortable. They're not necessarily designed to hold your hand through them.
I asked Jason and Dwayne about the most important outcome of anti-oppression trainings. Jason says that trainings help people develop a common language when talking about oppression. Using new language like the perpetual foreigner stereotype, or double consciousness, or universalized white experience, can lay down a common vocabulary amongst people. Once the common language is established, it can help to bridge divisions between people from different backgrounds. Dwayne says that the most important outcome of anti-oppression trainings is recognizing our own political identities.
I guess the main piece is owning your identity, you know? If you're white, own your whiteness. Don't arrive at a place where, you know, you can't accept the fact that you have some sort of white privilege in an American contemporary society. If you're talking about issues that relate to heterosexism, classism, these things, you can be, you know, two or five or 10 things all in one, you know? So owning identity doesn't necessarily mean I'm just going to pick black today. You know, it means just being able to identify yourself in the context of the world at large as somebody who is oppressed and is benefiting from oppression and can still do something about it.
In Boston, this is Home Fries.